What is the democratic philosophy, and how should the government evolve to better serve its people? Perhaps my guest today, Professor of Political Science at Illinois State University, Eric Rankin, can shed some light on these questions. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure.
My pleasure, Paul.
How about you tell us a little bit about yourself? What is your background in politics in general?
Sure. So born and raised in McLean County, Bloomington Normal has been my home pretty much my entire life. I am a product of Normal Community High School, went to Illinois State University for my undergrad and grad, did another graduate degree at George Washington University as well. Personally, for me, I found that doing politics was more important than researching politics. Now, I realize it sounds kind of funny as a professor telling you that doing's more important than researching, that I work at a place where we do a lot of researching. The research is important. But one of my favorite quotes came from Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin said, "Well done is always better than well said." And it's something that really stuck with me throughout my life. So it's one thing to learn about campaigns. It's one thing to learn about, you know, democracy. It's another thing to actually do it. And so pretty much my life's goal has been to how can I take theory and turn it into practice?
Okay. So first of all, you are a staunch Democrat. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Ironically, I'd say I grew up in a split household, right? My father was a Democrat. My mom was a Republican.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And they're divorced now. So that ought to tell you something pretty clear about that. And that wasn't the reason. One of the things I think it was interesting, I come from a long line of elected officials. And I'm trying to remember, I did all the research at one point in time of where it was great-great-grandpa and great-great-aunt. One of my family members, Jeanette Rankin, was the first elected female ever in United States history. She was a representative from the great state of Montana. My mother's, on my mother's side of the family, they're the Wilkies. Many people, whenever I say Wilkie, unless you're quite old, you don't know who Wendell Wilkie was, but Wendell Wilkie ran twice against FDR for president and lost. Mind you, both of those are Republicans and somehow I ended up as a Democrat. Mm-hmm. But the rest of my family, I would say, is pretty strong Democrats as well.
Okay. Now, you yourself are a former elected official, correct?
Yep. 10 years on the McLean County Board. I ran in 2008 after I had worked on a couple of campaigns for, at the time, a newly elected guy named Barack Obama. He inspired me, and I decided that I would run for office at some point in time, too. And I used to have students that all the time are like, "Rankin, you always tell us that getting involved is important. What are you doing?" I was like, "Fair point." I said, "Well, if I do it, then you're all helping me." And so I decided I'd take a flyer. I went to the Democratic Party and I had said, "Hey, listen, I want to challenge the guy that's sitting in my county board district's seat." And they said, "No." And I went, "But why?" And they're like, "Because he's already a Democrat. And since we already have an elected Democrat there, we don't want him to lose." I said, "Yeah, but he isn't any good." And they said, "Yeah, but, you know, he won." So nobody really didn't support me right out of the gate.
One more time, you were running for what position?
I was running for McLean County Board, right? District 9, which is in Southwest, at the time, it's now been redistricted, is in Southwest Bloomington. So I ran against a gentleman. We'll leave names out of it for now. People can go back and do a little bit of research. But I ran in a primary against the sitting incumbent Democrat and beat him. So then all of a sudden it was, "Oh man, who's this snot-nosed, you know, punk that's thinking that he could unseat already, you know, seated Democrats?" I was running against a guy that outspent me 2-1 in my first campaign, and I was running in a district that leaned Republican. It was a Republican majority district. So I didn't get given much of a chance. But I hustled my butt off, had great campaign managers and good friends and great support from students. I grew up in that district. And I ended up winning. And then I served for three terms, 10 years on the McLean County Board.
Okay. And when did that all end?
So 2008 to 2018. And at the end of 2018, my term ended. And then I ran for party chair for the Democratic Party in McLean County. And I served as the Democratic Party chair for the next 2 years after that.
Got it. Now, yep. Pardon my confused face at the beginning of when you were saying this. How old are you? You can't. You seem like a very young guy.
I'm 45, so thank you. I will. I'll slide you some money under the table after we're done with this. But yeah, 45.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. You must work out. Just side note.
I do a little bit. So thank you for recognizing.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so why do you think that you became a Democrat? Where did this your subscription to the ideas of the Democratic Party come from? You were in a mixed house, you said, and you come from a lineage of Republican, did you say?
Yeah, mostly Republican, at least from one side of my family. But a lot of what I heard, I grew up in McLean County, which has always had, and one of the things that bothered me, and this is why I ran for office, and then why I eventually became party chair. I'd always heard growing up, I mean, if you grew up in McLean County, people would say, oh, this is a totally red county. Hmm. And I always thought that was wrong. I'm like, how is it a red county? The vast majority of people in this town are transplants from the Chicagoland area, which is not a bastion of the conservative right. And then the other chunk of them are college students. How is it possible that this is a red county? Well, people were functionally correct because there were never any Democrats on the stinking ballot. Every so often, we'd get one or two that would run, and we had a few of them that were on the county board, but Democrats weren't on the ballot. Well, it's pretty easy to say that this is a red county when there's no choice. And what always drove me nuts about the Democratic Party in town, and I think they were doing their level best, it was hard to really get people engaged, especially when people were already resigned to, this is a red county, we can't win. Right now, first time in McLean County history, there are 10 Democrats and 10 Republicans on the county board. First time ever, right? Why? The last couple elections have tilted blue in McLean County. Last two presidential, last presidential election, then Trump won in 16. Am I telling that story right? 16, but Hillary carried. I'm going to have to try and remember that off the top of my head. We've been blue in the last couple of presidential elections. Mm. So what is that? What did that end up saying? It ended up saying McLean County is purple at best. Purple at best. It just kind of depends on what's going on nationally. But this is not. It is not a rock-ribbed red county.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people right now just that say that Democrats have gone further left, and maybe it's who I'm asking, who I'm hearing that is saying that, but some say that the Democratic Party has shifted left more than the Republicans have shifted right. What do you say to that, and is that a concern of yours?
I think that people that say that are smoking something that is clearly even probably not legal in the state of Illinois, which is impressive because things are pretty legal there. Both parties have moved. But when we talk about, and this is the thing that I struggle with the most when I talked about to people, if we look at the spectrum of political parties in the United States, there really are, you have what we call strong D's and strong R's, right? So SRSD. These are the diehards, right? This is the person that it doesn't matter what anybody says, A, they're going to vote in every single election, primary, whether it's a local election, they're involved in everything. They love politics.
Devout members. Right?
You don't even have to really, all you need to do is check in on them. So let's say Paul Garcia is a strong Democrat. All you needed to go, hey, Paul, you good? And Paul goes, yeah, I'm good. Right? That's it. You don't need to waste any resources on them. They're actually typically your donors. They're the ones that are working your campaigns because they're diehards. Hmm. That is less, right? At the max, that's 10% on each side. There's just not that many of them. The other 80% sits somewhere in the middle. Now, there's lean Dems and lean Republicans. These are ones that are, hey, generally they tend to vote for Democrats and generally they tend to vote for Republicans. They can be turned off by a really bad candidate, or they can be turned off sometimes by really unique circumstances. And then there's the unicorns, right? Mm-hmm. The unicorns are the people that are truly in the middle. Almost nobody is truly in the middle. Most people are leaners, but they don't like to admit it. Right? Why? Because the second that you say that you're a Democrat or Republican, you're immediately judged, right? Somebody will say, well, then you think this, right? Then you want to kill babies, or you want to, you know, you want to ban all guns, or, and then all of a sudden that ends up being a really nasty point of contention for people. So some people tend to say, well, I don't vote for one or the other. I'm in the middle. It's a safe place to be, but it's functionally not true. Most people don't exist in the middle. The ones that don't exist in the middle are the same people, or the ones that are in the middle are the ones that on election day, somebody says, hey, did you vote today? And they go, for what?
That are truly indifferent.
It's because they're not paying attention,
right?
Period, to politics.
It's hard to pay a lot of attention and not have some kind of leaning, correct?
Without a doubt. I mean, most of us are affected for lots of reasons. The number one thing that affects us in terms of our voter identification are our families, right? It's where we were born and raised. If when you were growing up, every time that Ronald Reagan came on the TV, your dad took off his shoe and threw it at the TV, you're probably a Democrat, mm-hmm. right? If every time, vice versa, now that somebody talked about Bill Clinton being a crook, then all of a sudden you're probably a Republican. Because those formative years are really important for students. On top of that is schooling. So if you had a particular teacher or you got involved in clubs and organizations, those things would actually give you some direction. Education is a huge indicator of how it is that you're going to vote. Every piece of research will tell you the more education you have, the greater the chances are for you to be a Democrat, mm-hmm. right? So you'll find that PhDs, masters, people, I mean, you're talking 80% plus. The less education, right, the more Republican you tend to be.
Right. Right. Why is that? Can you explain?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we see in education, right, and I've talked about this for years. A colleague and I, years ago, we had talked about this, Dr. Bradley. Bob Bradley is an awesome member of the McLean County community. And Bob and I had always talked about this idea that when students would come in, people would always, you know, they'd always say, you know what those college professors do. They just get their liberal goo all over the students and they're turning they're indoctrinating students and turn them into little liberals. Come to find out that that's not true. I did a longitudinal study. We asked incoming freshmen these were political science majors mostly, and some of them were outside political science majors in our large American government class. That's what I would teach. Track those students, right? Ask them what their political identification was on a spectrum. Were you a strong Democrat? Were you a strong Republican? And then on a scale, where did you identify? If the rumors were true, then we should have seen everybody move to the left.
Over time,
right? So 4 years later, we asked those same students, you've now gone through 4 years of college. If in fact we were crazy little indoctrinaires, we should have seen, right, that there would have been movement. You know what was fascinating? Not only didn't they move, if you came in as a Republican, you left as a Republican. If you came in as a Democrat, you left as a Democrat. We weren't changing hearts and minds, but the best piece that I found in that research was that the Republicans moderated their views and the left moderated their views. There was something about education that put Democrats and Republicans in the room together, and they had to talk to one another, where both sides moved closer to one another simply because they sat down and talked like adults. Amazing.
Isn't that the key to progress in the United States, in Congress and everything? Just to sit down and recognize one another as human beings with intelligent, more or less intelligent opinions, well-informed opinions, just to get together and talk.
And that is, now the problem is that as soon as we, and I say this understanding that I'm on a podcast, as soon as a microphone gets shoved in a person's face, And many times, like elected officials, it's not getting, I'm here of my own free will, right? It's not because somebody stuck a microphone in my face the second that I walked out of voting on the floor of the House of Representatives. But as soon as you stick a microphone in somebody's face, now that person knows that they have a primary election coming up. And in order to get their primary voters, remember those strong R's and strong D's that I talked about? Those are the ones that are deciding who wins those primaries, because that 80% in the middle, They're not voting. I mean, go look at the voter turnout statistics that we just saw in this election. Almost nobody turned out to vote. I mean, you're talking, I can't remember what the end total was. I think that there wasn't, there wasn't even 30,000 people that voted in the election. I need to go back and double check my numbers on that. But it's a fraction, right? It's a fraction of the number of voters actually in the state of Illinois. So when only a small swath of people are picking the elected officials, you're going to get the most extreme candidates. The Republicans picking Darren Bailey out of a field, that's anybody with a sophomoric understanding of politics would have said, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Come on down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
Anybody with a sophomoric understanding of politics would have said, that's exactly what's going to happen. It just made sense.
Because the hard R's, the big R's are the ones that come out and vote.
And they did. And Darren Bailey speaks directly to those people. He really does. He truthfully does. And now the hook will be, and most people recognize that it was also Governor Pritzker that wanted to run against Darren Bailey, because Darren Bailey becomes harder to win in a general election. Because if you appeal only to the people on the far right or the far left, it becomes that much more difficult. The Democrats have a great example at the presidential level of Bernie Sanders was the same way, right? That Bernie Sanders is, you know, was always seen as that hard L or that far right, far left. He's not a Democrat. I try and remind people this a lot.
Oh, he's not.
He's not. He caucuses with the Democrats. Bernie Sanders is an elected independent. There's a reason that Bernie Sanders doesn't run as an independent for president. It's because he can't win. So he barnacles up to the Democratic Party, right, and tries to run. We've seen this happen for a long time. Libertarians tend to, and when I say barnacle, people always get angry with me when I say that, but because it's, they seem like I'm trying to talk down to them. Listen, we have seen very clearly that a third party doesn't really work in the United States, just hasn't. The only time we find Democrats and Republicans working together is when they're trying to keep out all other parties, right? Democrats and Republicans like the Hatfields and the McCoys. They like the Montagues and the Capulets. They don't want the Montagues, the Capulets, and the Garcias, right? That just throws off the whole dynamic. So they're just going to work together to keep the story just with the two. And so if you're a libertarian, you have to find, well, we can't win. But if we join the Republicans, then maybe we have a shot at it. And there are libertarians that were able to win, right? Rand Paul's a great example of one of those as a Republican. And Bernie Sanders is the same way. So, but Bernie Sanders couldn't find ways to, he couldn't even get out of the primary because he's still, even on the hard D's, he didn't appeal to the masses. So that's the problem. Because when we elect people, primaries are a problem because primaries almost always give us an extreme. Local elections are a little different, but they almost always give us an extreme. Whereas then you come to the general and guess what? Now those 20% that we talked about, the 10 on each side, now they're buffeted by those other 80% that now come back into the mix. And the 80% go, you sound crazy, right?
Right.
And you get that on both sides. I mean, this is a pox on both your houses.
When you first walked in, you met my last guest, Scott Murphy, who I did not explicitly ask him before if he was a Republican or a Democrat, but it's apparent that he is a staunch Republican.
Yes.
Well, I thought it was interesting, first of all, that you two had a great interaction. You seem like you're friends.
Yeah.
Despite both being, you know, staunch Republicans
without a doubt,
Democrats. But he talked to me about term limits. And you even mentioned yourself that come time for election, governors, sitting governors, incumbent mm-hmm. governors know to start catering to their more loyal yep. further left or further right voters.
Yep.
Do you think, what do you think about term limits? Do you think that it's problematic? Do you think it's a problem that maybe sitting governors and sitting Congress members, their primary focus is not to serve the people, for at least for a moment, but rather to get reelected? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the case, and do you think that's a problem?
All right, so there's a lot wrapped up in that question.
Right.
I appreciate the question. I like the question. Let's see where we can run with it. So let's go in the first place. The U.S. Constitution, the three most important words in that entire document are we the people. We the people chose to create the document, and we the people have chosen to continue the document. That document did not include term limits. One would think that if they thought it was important, they would have included those term limits. The President of the United States is currently the only federal elected official with term limits. Hmm. Not in the House, not in the Senate. Well, I think we just realized not at all in the Supreme Court, right? Only the President of the United States. Now, states are different. There are term limits all over the place for governors. Certain states can choose those things. But I'm less concerned when it comes time to states. If we the people in those states decide that and their state constitutions want that, then I'm fine with that. What I will say is that term limits are not the magic wand that a number of people, and this is where Scott Murphy and I have disagreed with for years, very respectfully, they're not the solution to all of our problems. Yes, our politicians running almost immediately for office the second that they get elected, that yes, and they have to. They have to because that's become the reality. Now, is that a whole other question? Yes. Is it a problem that there is so much money wrapped up in our political elections? Without a doubt. Again, as much as a friend and a supporter of Governor Pritzker, there is part and parcel of problem. The last two governors that we've had in the state of Illinois are billionaires. How can a person feel my pain when if I took half of your money, Paul, today, I just went in your bank account and took half of it, how would your life be?
Oh, it'd be horrible.
Right? It'd be pretty awful, right? Huh. You probably lose this studio. You might have your car repossessed, right? If tomorrow I took half of J.B. Pritzker's money, he's still a billionaire.
Like, nah, right, right.
The effect of your life versus mine are very different. Now, that means that we're seeing more and more independently wealthy people running for public office because they can. You or I or Scott Murphy, it becomes exponentially more difficult because there's so much money wrapped up into it. Now, bringing it all the way back to term limits. I don't believe that term limits, as I said, they don't solve all of the problems. I think that institutional knowledge is a good thing. There is a decent amount of turnover that we see in government. If you really want to have term limits, which I think are undemocratic, if you take choice away from people, that is not democracy. Or any 18-year-old and over voter should have the choice to pick whomever it is that we want and not have some arbitrary limit being, well, this person served for 8 years or this person served for 4 terms. But what if I love that person and they're doing a great job and I want them to go back? Yeah, but they've been there for 12 years. Yes, but those 12 years have been fantastic. I'm happy with my representation. Why would I change my doctor who I've had for 12 years? Like, could you imagine going to your doctor like, Doc, we had a good run. You kept me healthy yeah. for 12 years, but I got to cut you off. I got to spread the love. Right. I got to give it to somebody else. Like, that should be my choice as a voter. If I want to keep returning the same, you know, person to that office, then I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I did just read his book. So yeah. I want to play devil's advocate. Please. To a few things. what you just said, a lot of the time, and you probably know this, people will vote for the familiar name, despite not knowing any of the other people, despite other more competent, more well-qualified people being in the mix. They just don't know their name.
Yeah. That's, I mean,
so they vote for who is familiar and who is most familiar. He or she who can pay to have their name broadcasted out there in front of you more than the other people. Yeah.
Sometimes it's not even that they can pay for it. I think, I mean, listen, case in point right here in town, right? The Bradys, right? Dan Brady and Bill Brady were getting elected, you know, every term. Bill Brady has been wildly successful, right? The Brady name has done really well, even though I don't think they're actually related, to be honest with you, or maybe they're distant cousins or something like that. But yes, but a lot of that isn't because, right? Because the answer to that means that you have to appeal to the, well, people are stupid. Because that's really what when you say, and I'm not saying you, when the point is brought that people will only vote for what's familiar, then you're saying that they're too stupid to go out and look at any alternatives. I only vote for this person because I heard their name, right? Yeah, I heard their name, but we have to put, the onus has to be put on the voter. It is your responsibility. And this is where I've struggled more than anything with students. When they would tell me, and not just students, this has been throughout my career, that people will vote for people, again, based on their last name, right? Think about it. Let's say that Hillary Clinton had actually beat Donald Trump, right? That would have meant in, I can't remember, in 20 some odd years that we would have chosen most of our presidents from two families. There would have been two Bushes and two Clintons. Mm-hmm. Like, you're telling me that we can't find any other families to run? The name does carry, but it does everywhere, right? You can't say that in Major League Baseball that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. didn't get a leg up because his father was Hall of Famer Vladimir Guerrero. Mm-hmm. This happens, right? We're from the state of Illinois with the Daly family. You know, names have always given people power. Now, I still don't think that's the big deal. I think if you're really serious about term limits, then you got to fix the problem with partisan gerrymandering of districts. It's a massive problem.
Sure.
It's a massive problem. Because our districts are so unequal, it is allowing a person to run over and over and over again, and they can win because it's the same group of voters, and there's no chance, right? There are certain, like if a person comes to me for a consulting gig and says, hey, I want to run for county board in McLean County Board District 2. As a Democrat, you're probably losing. In one, you're probably losing. These are in the county. Very rarely does a Democrat win in those areas. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't happen, right? It can happen, and it has happened in the past. But the demographics are built in such a way, and the parties are the ones that pick them. So when, and it's always interesting because Republicans in the state of Illinois will howl about how the Democrats partisan gerrymander at the state level. Mm. While Republicans—
I've heard it on the show plenty.
Without a doubt. I probably didn't hear them, and maybe you can ask them the next time you see one, hey, did that happen in Republican controlled counties? Because the county boards in those counties control the districting. Guess what? In those Republican controlled counties, they draw district lines to benefit them. I know this will come as some sort of a shock, but people in positions of power will always manipulate the rules to benefit, wait for it, themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. And so is that a problem? Yes. We allow, when you allow humans to draw their own districting lines, they're always going to draw them to benefit them and their people.
Human nature.
It is human nature. So you've got to, we have the ability to use algorithms, to use computers, to draw districts, to do it in a way that should be equitable for socioeconomic backgrounds, for skin color, for a number of different things. Mm-hmm. And that's a pox on both your houses. That happens at the Democrats and Republicans in different states do the exact same thing.
So you think there's a fair way to draw these lines?
Yep, there is.
Using computer programming, data, software.
Yep. And that's a Democrat saying this in the state of Illinois. Democrats do unfair at the state level. Of course, we unfairly draw lines. But when I say unfairly, it's still legal. It's legal. So the problem is the system. The system is wrong. So fix the system. If you don't like something, and I'm going to jump way off here, right? I teach my basic American government class has turned into line by line the entire U.S. Constitution, right? From day one of that class to the end of that class, we read every single word in the U.S. Constitution. That way, I know that at least one time in students' lives, because what I know as a functional truth is that the vast majority of Americans have never read their own document, which hurts my soul, right? But I had a student after the Roe versus Wade decision. He was fired up. He was all mad. He said, "You in class told us that this was a strong possibility." And I said, "Yes, I did." I said, "Why did I say that?" "You said that there's a word that doesn't exist in the U.S. Constitution that everybody assumes we have." I said, "Yep. What word is that?" "You said the right to privacy." I said, "Yep. Point to me in the U.S. Constitution where it says that you have a right to privacy." It's cobbled together in certain places via the Fourth Amendment, via the Ninth Amendment, and the Supreme Court has interpreted at times that we do have a right to privacy, but it's not explicit. So if you want it to be explicit, then you have to go back and change your document. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that. So when something is, you know, so when people were, "Can you believe that this happened?" I was talking in class. I'm like, "Yes." I said, "All it takes is for 5 Supreme Court justices to change their mind, right? And it to be a 5-4 decision, and Roe versus Wade will be overturned." And lo and behold, it's a 6-3 decision, and Roe versus Wade is overturned. Not shocked one bit. Almost everybody knew that it was coming. I think that the left was just, "Oh, they'll never do it. You're nuts."
Do you think, as far as being a constitutionally sound decision, overturning Roe v. Wade, was it valid?
Listen, it was valid only if we define the term that valid. Do I think it's a good decision? No, I think functionally it's a terrible decision. But then there's the big Democratic Party value in me saying that my belief is that it's between a woman and her doctor, period. But the U.S. Constitution is pretty silent on this fact, right? It's not in there. And really what the Supreme Court said was, leave it up to the states. Because, so if we the people really do believe that we should have a right to privacy, the U.S. Constitution needs to be amended, and it needs to be specifically outlined what privacy is and what does it mean.
Do you think that it's intentional to be vague in speech when it comes to government documents such as the Constitution? Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury is my favorite grocery store, not just in Central Illinois, but in the world. And for good reason. They have the most incredible customer service, friendly carryout workers, an exquisite and affordable bakery where fresh baked goods are prepared daily, and a deli market that is truly top-notch, that provides plenty of seating, delicious food, and even free coffee, if you can believe that. And their canned meats are out of this world. This is all just the tip of the iceberg, though, so if you haven't been here, you are really missing out. Come check out Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury, Illinois, where they've been wowing the customer for 72 years. When it comes to government documents such as the Constitution,
I think that it's interesting because there are parts of the Constitution that are not intentionally vague, right? That it's extremely and highly detailed. Sit and look at how a person becomes president, right? The Electoral College is very specifically defined, sure. Right? The requirements to be a member of the House and the Senate and in and the president. You look at the 25th Amendment, which has lots of very specific, you know, outlays to it. Yes, I think that the Constitution is vague in some places, and I think it's very specific in others.
Right, and allow me to rephrase, because first of all, this was written hundreds of years ago. Speech was slightly different, and it is fairly specific, and I think that was the intention.
Yep.
However, and general's the wrong word. I look at the bills that Congress passes. I don't actually read them because no one can read them because they're hundreds and hundreds together, thousands and thousands of pages long. The tax code in America is like 75,000 pages long.
Without a doubt. Ridiculous.
Well, and I also think it's interesting that in Congress, there's a large chunk of these people are lawyers.
Yep.
and they have access to the best lawyer's money can buy, and there's specific ways of phrasing things within these bills that no one's going to read because they can't read, that allow for legal loopholes, very specific legal loopholes to be there.
Yep.
So you agree with me that that happens, at least?
Without a doubt. Yes. I mean, Congress has a defined problem. It always has. And from the founding forward, and I usually say framers. I don't use founders. They didn't found anything. Actually, they stole most of it. When I say stole, right, they read John Locke's Second Treatise on Government, and you'll read the preponderance of the U.S. Constitution was already laid out there, right? But the framers took theory and put it into practice, which I love, right? So they were the framers. But as I've said to people, right, if you use that framer mentality, think of it like a house. Would you want to live in just a frame? Heck no, right? The frame would give me the structure, but it wouldn't give me insulation. It wouldn't give me walls. It wouldn't give me a bathroom. It would just give me a frame. We need to build things around it. And those things around it do become state laws, do become other congressional acts and things of that nature. Now, leaving things vague, you're right. It does give lawmakers wiggle room to do specific things. The problem that I've always struggled with when it comes time to not just the U.S. Constitution, but congressional lawmakers is they get into the deepest water when they try and legislate morality. Hmm. Let me say this one more time. Congressional members, and that's state and local, get in trouble when they try and legislate morality, right? So who you can and cannot marry, what you should or should not do with your body, what you should and should not put into your body, whether that's smoking something or drinking something. We have had disastrous effects when we have attempted to legislate morality, right? Prohibition's a great example. Didn't work, right? Not so much that it didn't work, that it actually created organized crime. We did something really terrible, but the concept, and this is where I struggle. I talked in class about this a lot. If you were to look at it at its fundamental basis, alcohol does bad things to people when consumed too much. Yes. So should we make laws that don't allow people to use it? Yes. Cool. So we did that and everything got worse. Everything got worse. Mm-hmm. Marijuana. The war on drugs, there is no rational human being that can come to the conclusion that it has been successful. It hasn't. People are still doing drugs. Just because you tell people they can't doesn't mean they won't. And unfortunately for people, regardless of what side you believe on the argument, will this overturning of Roe versus Wade stop abortions? It won't.
Could it have a counterproductive effect than what is intended?
Absolutely. Right? It could be where you're actually causing more harm to women.
I heard that, and I've actually seen, hopefully I remember it correctly, that under Obama, a very pro-choice president, abortions were down, and under Bush, they were up.
They were up, right? And that's been weird, right? I mean, abortions had, they had been trending down for quite some time. Much of that was, there was more information that was out there. Most people recognize that, listen, having children is I have two of them. I love them to death. Are they a financial burden? That's the only place where my children are a burden. They're a blessing in every other way, but man, those things cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so there are people that are saying, especially your generation, that has stepped back going, yeah, maybe I don't want kids, or maybe I just kind of have one kid instead of the two or the three that was happening in the generations beforehand. And there's a lot of, there's a lot more information that has been presented to you through school, through other organizations, like contraception has been pretty ubiquitous. It's been handed out and it's very readily accessible in a number of ways. This was always one of the few things that specifically the Republican Party, this was one of their big ticket hot button agenda items. It brings their voters to the polls. We were talking anecdotally beforehand about how emotions are really important for elections. because if you can tap into emotion, then you can get people to do something. Hmm. Right? People are pissed right now. They are. What are they mad at? I'm mad every time I go and get gas. I drive an 18-year-old Ford F-150. When I pull into the gas station, that's $100 plus to fill up my tank. I'm mad, right? Now, if somebody says, hey, guess what? You know who did that? Joe Biden did that. Then somebody's like, well, we can't have this Joe Biden guy because I can't pay for $5 for gas. And it's not, what's interesting is that abortion, I know this will, you know, I'm not trying to offend every female that's listening to this. Abortion affects mostly, right? Obviously females, because it is not men who are having to make these decisions. Who does gasoline affect? Every single American. So half of the women, right? More than half are pretty up in arms because most of them, the majority of women are Democrats, right? The statistics just bear that out.
Oh, I did not know that actually.
Yes. Women tend to be more Democratic than men. Mm-hmm. Has been that way for quite some time. Women make up a bulk of the Democratic Party.
Period. I guess it's not surprising.
It's not.
From a psychological perspective.
Yeah, the Democratic Party is literally run by women and people of color, which is always so distracting that there are too many older white guys then that end up becoming nominees, right? And we've not seen that, you know, over the last couple of election cycles. You're starting, I mean, diversity in political parties. I mean, take a look at just what it looks like. If you were to put all the Republicans in one room that are federally elected versus all the Democrats in one room that are federally elected, they're going to look very different.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons. But
you just take a picture of them and you can obviously see the
without a doubt.
The extreme diversity of color, size, ethnicity, sex, everything.
And what Democrats. People don't understand is that this country is not getting more white. It is getting more racially diverse. So unfortunately, if you're the party of mostly white people, this is a math problem. While it may be working right now for the right, on a long enough timeline, continuing with the rhetoric, this is going to be a problem for the Republican Party because they're too narrow, right? Their subset, you know, what the white population in the United States is not growing. It's at a 0% replacement rating. For every mom and dad, there are two kids, right? But it is growing. The greatest growth is on the Latino side. Less growth, but it's still happening a little bit, is on the African-American side. So more racial diversity. And where do you find 90% of African-Americans? In the Democratic Party. Latinos still are, and Latinos are way harder to, when you start talking in generalities, Latinos always a problem. Because Cubans are different than Dominicans, who are different than Mexicans, who are different, right? And so all of a sudden, you start going, right? And the Latino population in Texas tends to be different than Southern California, tends to be different than Florida. And so, and a lot of that then starts to move into arguments about religion, right? The Latino population does tend to be much more, in general, again, I hate generalities, but we have to speak in them, Catholic. And obviously, abortion's been a pretty hot button issue when it comes time to the Catholic faith as well.
Sure, yeah. And as a Mexican Catholic myself, I mean, it's really interesting seeing. It's almost like there's confusion among the Mexican demographic because they're conservative in their values, but they vote Democrat. Yeah. But then they're like, well, the Democrat values don't exactly line up with my Catholic values.
Without a doubt.
But then there's also, and I know this because I've talked to plenty of Mexican people. There's this underlying narrative that Republicans dislike them or that there's some lingering racism.
Yep.
What do you think about that? Is that ill-advised? Is that wrong? Is that
so it depends
propaganda?
Upon who in some ways, I mean, listen, if in fact you just look at, let's take out the emotion out of it, look at rules and regulations that are in place, right? So border disputes, there's been plenty of tension amongst the Latino communities that are on the southern border. Investment in education for the Latino populations. Those are all places where you can very clearly see that their schools are woefully underfunded in areas that are predominantly Latino. So whenever I get into this conversation with people, I'm always like, listen, don't take my word for it. Just go and look at data.
The tractor cab is the mission control of the entire farming operation. Worn out and outdated tractor cabs lead to annoying discomfort, hindered productivity, dangerous sound levels, and lower resale value. This is why you need to revive your tractor cab with Fair Cab Interiors. Today, we use our vast facility in the cornfields of Illinois to manufacture high-quality custom tractor upholstery for over 750 models from the 1960s all the way through to the 2010s. Our team of product engineers carefully design each new part, emphasizing product fit and ease of installation for anyone to install. We offer acoustical foam panels, ProForm plastic panels, headliners, floor mats, door and window seals, seats, and much more. We carefully monitor lamination quality, use premium grade foam, and utilize the highest standards of raw materials when manufacturing. With our massive inventory and delivery trucks that pick up daily, logistics are a snap. Our call center is manned not by robot answering machines, but real, experienced, and knowledgeable people who will provide you with installation tips, product details, and help with any questions you may have before or after the sale. But don't just take our word for all this. See what people are saying on faircab.com and Google reviews, where we've earned over 2,000 five-star reviews.
When the time comes to fix up your aging tractor interior, try out the cab interior experts at Fair Cab. Visit us at faircab.com or give us a call at 815-692-3355.
Just go and look at data. So the right looks at this and they know that they can exploit people. And listen, exploitation happens on both sides of the party. But again, this is an emotional thing. It depends on what you're really wanting as a person and as a race. And that's a lot harder, right? A lot of the talking points from the right have been very aggressive against immigration, right? That we don't want immigrants here. How many times have you heard, they're taking our jobs. Mm-hmm. What jobs are you talking about, right? Where are you talking about?
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, hey, me either, Siri. But those are really interesting. She's always keeping me honest. But those tend to be, right? Those are bread and butter, nuts and bolts sort of issues. And so when you dial down into it, if your rhetoric is very aggressive against immigrants, and let's see, are they talking about Canadians coming into our country? I get the sense the answer is no, right? Whenever they talk about border protection, they're not talking about, you know, the northern border. They're talking about the southern border. And so those feelings in there should get a little hardened, right? Like, does the Republican Party really look out for me? And my answer would be no. I don't find that the Republican Party has much in common outside of some, specifically the abortion issue, does tend to be a little bit more in line with the Republican Party. But I would think the average Latino voter should feel, and this is now, here's my big bias, should feel more comfortable in the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party is the one that, it doesn't encourage open borders. It certainly hasn't and never has, but it's certainly been more approachable to saying, hey, how can we get all people that want to be in our country legally, how can we get them in here?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what do you think about this? This is really interesting for me, and perhaps this is even immature of me.
Yeah.
When people refer to vast swaths of demographics as one unit,
monolithic
almost.
Link. Yep.
Right. Yeah. The Latino people, Mexican people believe this.
Yep.
I've had people that don't know that I'm Mexican, maybe didn't know my last name, say that that Mexicans suffer on a day-to-day basis from discrimination in a number of ways. And then I would say, I don't feel like that.
Sure.
You know, I'm an individual.
Yes.
I am Mexican, but I haven't suffered from any of this. Yep. I haven't had any significant things derail me on my pursuit to success in any given... life's not more hard for me than it is for a white person.
Without a doubt.
And then they've said, you know, like, well what would you know? And then I tell them, hey, I'm Mexican. And then, I didn't realize that.
Right.
You know, in the winter when I'm a little more white and stuff. But
Well,
what do you think? Is that a problem, this identity politics thing, and referring to groups like that?
Without a doubt. Now, the problem that we have in politics is there's there's no real other vehicle for us to do it because we can't talk about people on the individual level,
right?
Right. The monolithic stuff is just the way, right? Because if truthfully, we the people is still true and what we adhere to is that one of the things that's most important about a representative democracy is that a democracy needs to be representative of what the people think. The only way that we can actually figure out what the people think is to try and poll them, right? The most accurate, and it's still not accurate, the most accurate data that we ever get is the census, right? Mm-hmm. We literally try and count every single person in the United States. But when it comes time to feelings, right? How do you feel about your opportunities in the United States? Or how do you feel about X, Y, or Z? We have to pull a small number of people to come up with a nationally significant survey, which a nationally significant survey in the United States usually is 1,000 people, right? But there's some, you know, there is obviously some error that is going to be prevalent there. But you're right. And so part of it is, and Paul, this is a difficult conversation, right? That there are certain people that could say, well, you can get away with it because you don't look like the type of person that other people are talking about, right? Hmm. That you look more as if you're a white person, right? Hmm. So if they didn't know that your last name was Garcia and they didn't have you self-identify, it'd be harder for people to identify. Well, that's hard. It's a lot different if you're a black person in the United States. There's not much.
I wonder what that is like. If I could put on like a black suit, a costume that just looked exactly like a black person.
Yes.
I mean, I wonder if I would notice. Like,
there has been, right? There has been research that's been done on that, right? Mm-hmm. That people know, right? Or even that you see that when you're in a position, it's a funny example, but like undercover boss, right? When the boss goes down and he works with people at the lower level, all of a sudden he sees things that he didn't see before because from your perspective, you can't understand because, right? That's your privilege, right? And again, I'm a white, I'm a white male that grew up in, central Illinois. I'm straight. I don't know what it's like to be gay. I can't even for 2 seconds, but I've talked to a lot of students who their lives have completely turned upside down the moment that they came out. I've had parents disown them. I've had, people who loved them, like their grandma, say that they don't want to be associated with them anymore. I can't imagine what it would be like to walk a mile in a woman's shoes right now. I wouldn't understand what it's like to be Latino, what it's like to be black, because those aren't any experiences that I've ever had. And I think that's a danger for all of us. Because we, and especially in government, we try and make rules that are for all people, that they're not just for one group or another.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right. Once I just thought about it for a minute, it's like my experience as a Mexican person in my ethnicity, in my DNA, my last name, skin tone.
Yep.
I look like a white guy with a tan and I speak perfect English. Yep. I am straight as can be. I'm even Catholic. Right. And my experience is going to be drastically different from someone that literally just came from Mexico, can't speak much English, looks way darker than I am, looks more traditionally Mexican, et cetera, is more culturally Mexican.
Without a doubt. I had one of my best friends when I was in college, was a Korean guy. I remember one time we were up in downtown Bloomington at the bars, and this one guy came up to him on the, street and started speaking Korean to him. And my friend's like, I was born in Bloomington Normal. I have no idea what you're saying.
In the summer, I see that a lot more Spanish, which is funny.
He didn't grow up. He didn't speak, he didn't speak the language. So when he told the guy got pissed at him, he was like, whoa, and then he walked away. But he's like, there are oftentimes people look at another person and they leap to a conclusion. We do it all the time. Whether a person looks gay, whether a person looks Mexican, whether a person looks right, whatever it is. And then we start to make... all these other connections as to how they think and feel.
Right.
And those are dangerous. They're really dangerous.
Sure.
Same thing happens in politics. Because you're a Democrat or because you're a Republican, that must mean you think this.
Yeah.
Right? I had a student last year, we got in this huge gun debate, right? And he laughed. He's like, well, you Democrats, you have all these feelings and you want to take away our guns. And I said, hold on a second. And I reached in my pocket and I pulled out my wallet and I pulled out my FOID card and I sat it down. He went, you have a gun? And I went, yes, but you're a Democrat. I said, do you think only Republicans own guns? Do you think only Republicans think that gun ownership is acceptable? I said, there are common sense guidelines. I don't think that we should disarm everybody. Do I think, and I said, let me ask you a question. Do you think you should be able to roll down Veterans Parkway in a tank? And he's like, well, no. I said, so you're for some restrictions. Well, yes. I said, should I? I am a huge, I love Arnold Schwarzenegger's Predator, right? Should I be able to have a Gatling gun that I can walk around on campus because I feel more comfortable when I'm carrying a helicopter gun? Well, no. Should I be able to come to class with a shoulder-mounted rocket launcher? Mm. Well, no. I said, so there's four examples that you would say, well, that's a bridge too far.
It's interesting how you could find some common ground if you just sit and talk, though. It's like eventually you will come to some area. It's like, well, maybe. And then the other person, well, maybe. Okay, well, maybe we can say within here and here, this is what can be permitted by the law.
Without a doubt. And so because he immediately thought, because I'm a Democrat, I must mean no guns, period. I'm like, listen, I married a girl from rural Ohio. The day I walked into her mom and dad's house, there was a loaded shotgun in the corner. I asked my father-in-law, why do you have a shotgun in the corner? He says, well, those are for the beavers. And I said, you got a big beaver problem on the farm? He says, believe it or not, yeah, they get into a lot of things. And I'm like, this guy is not, he's not going out shooting up the town square. He's not the guy in Highland Park. He's a guy that's killing some varmint on his farmland. Guns can be used in a logical and useful way. It's the same thing when people think they take one thing and then they extrapolate out and they say, well, it's going to lead to this. I don't know how many times you've heard it, probably with your age as well. Violent video games have led to all of this violence. Like, listen, do you know how many zombies I've killed? I mean, and now my daughter and I share a love of killing zombies in Resident Evil 6, right? We sit there at night and we love playing games together. At no point in time have I ever taken the next logical leap of, you know what, maybe I should go out and shoot people. Well, this is a video game. I understand that this is not real. I don't take that next leap. And the vast majority of people that play violent video games don't have any of those problems. Mm. Are there some people that do? Sure. But does that mean that we have to ban video games for when 99.9% of the population doesn't have any problem with it? Now, guns are different, right? It's the same thing. Are they bad? Okay. One of the things that I will suggest, one of the things that we stop doing in politics is using the terms good or bad and big and small. Mm. I hate people that don't define their terms.
Right.
We do it all the time, right? I'm for small government. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's intentionally vague,
I think. Right, right. I mean, I'm for big government. I'm a Democrat. I don't know what you mean by big government. I don't want government telling me what to do any more than you want government telling you what to do. And actually, the longer we sit and talk, this is one of the things that was great about Murphy and I. We actually found there's tons of commonalities that I had. Murphy was in here. He was telling this story about a guy named Rich Buchanan, former mayor of Bloomington, and then ran for county board. Got along with Rich really, really well. I remember after one, I was on the finance committee, and after one particular meeting, he stopped me. He says, "Rankin, you're more fiscally conservative than most of Republicans on this county board." And I said, because in my position as an elected official, I'm spending not just Eric Rankin's money. I'm spending Paul Garcia's money. I'm spending Joe Blow's money. That's your tax dollars that I'm in charge of. I'm not just going to go out and waste your money just because I think that I want to waste your money. Democrats can be fiscal conservatives. Republicans can be socially liberal. Now, all of a sudden, people are like, wait, what? No. Yes, these vague terms are what get us in trouble all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. Now, are some of those vague terms true? Yes, of course, right? Do some people, when we say, do I believe in small government? Small to them means none. Okay, I don't believe in that, right? Do you believe in big government? Do I believe that government has a role? Yes. Do I believe the government should do as much as it can to help even the playing field in our country? Sure. Cool. Does that make it big? I don't know how you define big, right? Mm-hmm. But that's where we tend to get into problems with people all the time.
I want to jump into a specific topic that we've touched on, and it's guns. Yeah. Well, it's sort of guns. More so, look, there's been a spike in mass shootings. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
Right.
Is this like, you know, a lot of people say it's a mental health problem disguised as a gun problem. Yeah. But what say you?
Yeah, sure. It's both, right? Nobody should be shocked that when another human being kills another human being, that there's a mental health issue. Humans aren't supposed to, for no reason, go out and kill other human beings. Of course that person was suffering from some sort of a mental problem. But the problem is much bigger. How did that person get that weapon of, really, let's call it what it is. It's a weapon of mass destruction, right? I think I saw, if I'm not mistaken, I think the number was in the first 6 months of the year, the United States saw 306 mass shootings. Mass shootings are defined as where four or more people are killed or injured, right? 306. Mm. Paul, the problem is that this has become ubiquitous. It's not even, so when we have to define what's normal and abnormal, if you walked around, if you left this room right now and walked outside without your pants on, everybody would be going, dude, that guy doesn't have his pants on. Mm-hmm. But if everybody was walking around without their pants on, nobody cares anymore because nobody's wearing pants anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Right?
It's so common, it hardly jumps out at you.
That's what's happened with the gun issue is that nobody looked at Uvalde and went, oh, that's weird. Everybody went, oh, it's just another one. Hope it doesn't get me. And then it happens to someone. Listen, it should have affected us Illinoisans a little harder because this was in Highland Park. This could have been Highland Park's not so dissimilar from McLean County. This could have been a 4th of July parade in Downs or in Chenoa or right here in Bloomington Normal. There's nothing that says that. And yet we, the people, just kind of brush it off. We've had, like, Uvalde was the killing of, let's be honest, these were basically, these were babies, right? I mean, when I say baby, I don't mean that they're in a crib or something, but these are children. If we can't find common sense ways to come together to stop the slaughter of innocent children, I don't know where we've gone as a society.
What do you suggest we do?
Yeah. And so certainly I'll be not the first person to suggest that let's go after stuff that's pretty simple to do first, right? We had talked, we were doing some of that anecdotal conversation before we started the interview. Oftentimes there's 80% of things that we can agree on, and then there's the other 20% that we just can't budge on, right? So let's let Democrats and Republicans, let's start with an immutable, two things that are absolutely factually true. We are not going to have a gun-free society. It is guaranteed through the Second Amendment. We should not have a society that allows for rampant access to firearms that anybody can get at any time. These mass shootings can not only continue, they can grow, right? Those are the two extremes. All right. So the left isn't going to get no guns and the right isn't going to get all guns. Where can we meet in the middle? So let's agree. People that have any documented problems with violence immediately are put on a list and you're not allowed to have a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Then we'd have to figure out, what determines violence.
Absolutely.
Define definitions, right?
Absolutely. But I think that we can come back to it. If I've had to go to, Joe Blow's house because he was involved in a domestic violence dispute and he hit his wife, I'm not going to let Joe Blow have a gun anymore. Right. Okay. Why? Because he has a demonstrated, history of violence.
An inability to hold back his rage.
You got it, mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
So those are people that you can very easily go, you don't get them, right? And maybe that they're, again, we'll get into weeds if we spend too long of what
exactly.
If you're a person that has committed a felony, cool. No firearms for you, right? Now we'd have to define violent felonies versus others. You know, this person stole from people. Is that person a gun risk, right? Mm-hmm. So these are things like red flag laws that we've talked about. If we see that there are red flags in people, if you have documented thing, right? If somebody has said, I'm going to come to school and I'm going to kill, you know, I'm going to kill other kids immediately. If that person has any firearms that are actually signed out to them, or they have them as listed on their FOID ownership, immediately those guns have to be confiscated and turned in, because unfortunately you can't be trusted.
Right.
Period. Now, does this mean that you have to create some sort of an organization that's actually policing these things? Yes, they're actually called the police, right? This recent shooting did happen in, you know, in Highland Park. And one of the questions was, there were some flags that came up with this young man. Why was he allowed to have these firearms? Again, this is a perfect example of what I think you were asking before of, well, we have some of these rules, but now somebody's got to be able to enforce them. What if the laws aren't very good to enforce them? Here's your problem. The Brendan Heffner, former police chief in Bloomington, is now the head of the Illinois State Police. And he was the one that said there wasn't enough credible information for us to disarm or not allow the gun ownership of the young man that shot the people in Highland Park. So maybe it forces us to step back and go, do we need to lower the threshold? Do we need to, because it still happened. Mm-hmm. And we had some understanding. Is it a perfect situation? No, it's not. Are some people going to be, the vast majority of people are not losing their guns, period. If you are a person that understands the serious nature of guns, one of my best friends in town, I won't name names. You know, he was the guy that helped me when I decided that I was going to purchase a firearm. He was so strict about rules and how these are supposed to be treated. I won't help you purchase this or tell you how to do this unless you agree to go to classes. And he was very serious about it. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I find the vast majority of gun owners are actually really responsible people.
Sure.
They are. But there's a problem in the United States of America. Something is happening here that's not happening everywhere else. And I want you to think for one second, because this is a thing that tends to bother me. How often do these shootings, do you see women as the shooter?
Hardly ever.
Hardly ever. And even then, we could take it back. So it's not women. And it traditionally hasn't been people of color either. This is a younger white male problem.
When you talk about the mass shootings, yes. Because inner city shootings, totally different.
They exist, right?
Right. I'm asking about mass shootings, of course.
I mean, so they're, you know, that's the 306 in the first, you know, the vast majority of those. Young white men. What's going on with our young white men? I don't have, hopefully you don't turn around and go, so what is? I have no idea.
Dang it, I was.
Right? I mean, it gets connected to everything else. It gets connected to feelings of inadequacy. Men, period, have problems with emotional development. Mm-hmm. And this is finally one of the places where I can speak from a position of authority. We tend not to seek help for it because it undermines us and it undermines our traditional notions of what it's like to be a man, right? To go to a therapist, to talk to somebody about your issues. I see a therapist twice a month. I could not envision my life without a therapist.
Most people would benefit greatly from probably seeing a therapist.
Without a doubt. And we have a crap healthcare system that most of our people don't have insurance that will cover it. We don't have enough psychologists and psychiatrists that are even able to practice if we were to add everybody to the roles. I have a very good friend of mine who has a child that is Look at that. It's ironic. That gentleman that's running for mayor in Chicago. A friend of mine who is struggling, right? She just now, it took her over 2 years to get her child, a young boy, who has had behavioral issues, that to get him in to see a therapist. They have insurance. They have money. It was just the difficulty of even getting a slot in to see a therapist. Mm-hmm. That is what the problem is.
Right. I've had psychologists and counselors on the show, and they say they're just beyond booked.
They're beyond booked. We need more of them, mm-hmm. and we need men specifically, right? So any guy that's listening to this, you have got to drop your defense, right? You've got to be able to sit. It's okay to go and talk to somebody about your marriage. If you're feeling inadequate about whatever's going on in your life, if you feel that you've done something wrong, or if you're not the breadwinner in your family, to talk about why or what's going on. I mean, the amount of things that we have that gets locked up in here, just sitting down and having a conversation about it with a professional can do so much for us. And I wonder, every time that I hear about one of these shootings, it's always, God, if somebody had just talked to that damn kid, mm-hmm. if somebody had just said, hey, are you okay? What's wrong? How many lives could be saved just by showing love and compassion and empathy to just a scared boy?
I completely agree.
It hurts me. As a guy that's got two girls, I'll tell you what, I'm blessed. My girls talk to me. Now, it's not to say that women don't need therapists. They need them just as bad. But I'm telling you what, if there is an absolute necessity for anything in this world right now, it's that young American boys, specifically, they need therapists. All of them. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are. Even if things seem good, they need to talk to somebody. This is where our healthcare system is broken, and we need a fix here. And I don't know how to do that.
Right. And we talked about Jordan Peterson a little bit beforehand. Yeah. And he talks about all the time the importance of, first of all, how horrible of an idea it is to feel inadequate and to have these terrible thoughts in your head, and then to just recess into your, or be reclusive and go to your own basement, not have any friends. Yep. And then if people, God forbid, people start picking on you because you're weird, and then you just go and dwell in these horrible thoughts in your own basement, and no one's there to tell you that, hey, that's a crazy thought, man.
Yeah.
And then you just grow in your likelihood to carry out these terrible things, these terrible thoughts, and you can answer that if you need to. Okay. No, well, yeah, it just makes a whole lot of sense. I think I completely agree with you.
And I think, and the Jordan Petersons of the world and the others, like and I talked about this in class before when we talked about gun issues. It gets really sensitive sometimes, obviously, when you're talking about this. And I asked the students, I said, how many of you have held a gun? You know, and I get, you know, I teach large lecture halls, so I usually get 20, 30, 40 people. I said, how'd you feel? Every person, you feel powerful, right? Hmm. What does that gun do? It gives you something that you didn't have before. There's a reason why when you're sitting at the coffee shop and a cop walks in, I guarantee you every single rational human's eyes will end up on that gun at some point in time. Why? Because a gun is a symbol for power. And when you have a young boy who has been picked on, beat up on, made fun of, what does a gun give him? It gives me power. It gives me strength. It gives me a feeling that I wish I had in my life. And so they're not the most rational because they're in pain. And so what do? They act out. And not every boy does that, right? There are plenty of kids that were bullied and they turned around and they used being bullied as as something that changed their life, right? So I don't even think that's always but I'm telling you what, it's really scary now.
It is. It is incredibly scary.
I can't imagine.
You can only hope that they that they turn to some positive outlet. Some guys join the UFC. Some guys start getting into MMA. Yeah. Or they apply the frustration that they feel. They kind of give all that pent-up energy the correct outlet.
Yep.
But sometimes it's just not the correct outlet for a number of reasons. It's so multifaceted.
It is. And I mean, I've even talked to all students that I've talked to at Illinois State University, right? I'm also the academic advisor for our department. So oftentimes I will get, I'll get a student that will... they'll come to me and I'll know something's going on, right? There's a problem. They're having problems at home. They're having problems with a significant other. They're having problems. Maybe they're coming out. Mm-hmm. They have all of these issues. And then, we'll try and make a referral to, ISU's counseling center. And the ISU counselors do an amazing job, but I can tell you without a doubt, it's really hard for those students to get in even to see those because there's just not enough of them to go around for the students that need to see them. And so then you're left on to, I'm kind of afraid to tell my mom and dad that I need to see a therapist because then my mom and dad are the reason that I need to see a therapist. And so now I don't know what to do. And I watch these poor kids just, and I'll tell you what, Paul, I started teaching at ISU, or I started working at ISU in 2000. This problem hasn't just, you see a nice little graph where it's like, it's gone. It's just grown exponentially.
What? This graph of what?
The graph of students that are in stress and are needing mental health services. Yeah. It is growing exponentially, and not just people that I'm like, they're struggling, they're going through being a knuckleheaded 18-year-old to 21-year-old, because that's what happens during that age where people, they're going through some things. No, this is people who need help. They don't know how to manage in this world. And a lot of that, and I hate to make a horrible pivot because I know we've been talking a while. They live in this fishbowl, right? Where everything that they do is seen through this lens of social media. Mm-hmm. We were at the gym the other day and I was joking with some friends and they're like, basically my age in their mid 40s. Can you imagine what it had been like growing up and having Instagram, like people seeing the dumb things we did?
And it's there forever.
And it's there forever.
Yep,
like, people like, here's the place where, I have two beautiful little girls that I had to consciously work to present them with the appropriate, in my estimation, of what beauty is in society. Because if you look at Instagram or you look at Facebook, or they don't look at Facebook. That's for old people. As my daughter.
That's right.
if you look at Instagram or Snapchat and things like that, what passes for beauty, right? It was hard. My oldest daughter was bit in the face by our family dog when she was pretty young. She's 56 stitches on her face to put it back together. It was very traumatic for her. And we worked so hard to really impress upon her how that scar on her face is what makes her beautiful. And me as my father, as her father, I can't see her as anything but gorgeous. But I know that other people have said, right? I remember some kid like in fifth grade called her chainsaw face. And I'm like,
kids are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, kids are kids. And she could have let, but we had built her up to know that her scar was awesome. And her response was, yeah, but I look cool.
Whoa.
And I'm like, that's my kid, right? But that was because somebody loved her and cared about her enough to be able to say, this is awesome and you're cool. Beauty is way more than just having flawless skin. That's really hard for people to do. I can't imagine, right? I've said this and I make no bones about it. I say this in class. I've said this in the gym when I'm coaching. I'm a sexist against men. I don't know what it is about us. We're a bunch of knuckleheads. I'm not sure that men should be in charge of anything. I'm not a person and seriously, I think that if people look at all of the bad decisions that have been made in our country, 9 times out of 10, those decisions have been made by men. If you're mad because our country is where are we at now? $3 trillion in debt, whatever it is. That's by men, right? Every war voted on by predominantly men. Everything that we have done that has been wrong has been because our egos are so wrapped up in everything. Ego is the enemy. And that's our fault. Now, I'm not saying that women don't have egos. They have egos. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, when I had the pleasure of working around some amazing women when I was with the Democratic Party, Shana Wachinski, Nikita Richards, Lola Augston, Rachel Lund. These were people who, when I worked with them, I just sat back in awe at their ideas and things that they thought. I'm like, oh my God, that's genius. Why am I in charge? Why are they in charge? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's because they didn't run for those positions.
Because, well, among many things, right? It could be have something to do with being egotistical.
Totally. No offense to you. No, you're absolutely right, Paul, because yeah. I was the one. Well, I've been on the county board for 10 years and I've done these things. And they all, well, I haven't done those things, so I can't run for that position. You're nuts. It's true. You're genius. Put yourself out there. Let people hear you. And that's where I feel like for us guys, having no skills never stops us from putting ourselves out there.
Yeah.
It really doesn't.
You're touching on some deep psychological and biological things right here that we'd, I mean, that's we for could a be whole here other for a podcast episode. Right. But man, Eric Rankin, I just want to say for the interest of time, we better go ahead and cut this off soon. I mean, right about now. But I mean, I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Anytime.
It's truly been a pleasure talking to you. I've learned so much.
Thank you, sir.
My gears turning. I know people are going to love this episode.
Awesome.
So looking I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate it, sir.
Yep. And we'll do this again sometime.
Looking forward to it.
Right on. And thank you everyone for watching and listening to The Paul Garcia Show. That was Professor Eric Rankin, political science professor at Illinois State University. Thank you again. And God bless. And have a great week.